Welcome back, ladies and gents. We are going to talk about stories today. And the topic I had in mind was why fiction is a necessity. This isn't a quote that I made up, but this comes from G.K. Chesterton, who said that literature is a luxury and fiction is a necessity. Now, I'm not I'd be curious if you unpacked that a little bit more. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say why fiction is a necessity. Now, I don't mean necessity in the means of it's not salvific. This isn't something that's going to save you. But I definitely think we need all the help that we can get. And by reading fiction, I think it's gonna enrich our world. I think we can gain wisdom. I think we can be taught. We can grow. And I think the more beauty and the glory that we can behold in the fiction that we do read, when it points our gaze and direction back to Jesus, that's going to help shape and form and mold us in becoming us in helping us become more like Jesus. And where I'm kind of getting that premise is from I think it's 2 Corinthians 3 where it talks about and we beholding the glory of the Lord with unveiled faces beholding the glory of the Lord are being transformed from one degree of glory to the next. And so as we behold God's glory, which I think we can behold his glory in the world as much as we can, or I should say, maybe not as much, but we can behold his glory in the world as well, more so from the word, but also in the world that he's created for us. And so, I think let's start it off with that. And actually, I want to share, it's actually probably gonna be a lot of quotes. Just in my all of my reading, and I've just been finding lots and lots of gems of just the importance of stories, of fiction, of literature, and why we read, why do we engage in stories. And so I'm going to start off with a quote that is actually from The Professor and the Madman, which is a movie as well as a book. By Simon Winchester, which I'm actually currently reading. If you want to watch the movie, I definitely think it's worth it. It is probably in my top 10 favorite movies. There's definitely a kind of a cringy scene in the movie, just to give you a heads up. But man, it is a powerful, powerful story. And so. But one of the quotes was from a guy in there named William Chester Minor, and a guy who helped contribute to the construction and helping make the Oxford English Dictionary. And he was talking to a lady named Mrs. Merritt and talking about books and words. And I believe this was a lady who didn't know how to read. And he looked Mrs. Merritt in the eye and he says, "It's freedom, Mrs. Merritt. I can fly out of this place on the back of books. I've gone to the end of the world on the wings of words. When I read, no one is after me. When I read, I am the one who is chasing after God." And so that gives you just a little flavor of the story. Obviously there's so much more to it, but I'm also going to be quoting from Daniel Taylor. This is from the book Christian Imagination. And I thought this was some of these were just so profound. He says, "We are drawn to stories because our own life is a story, and we are looking for help. Stories help us by telling us the truth without which we cannot live." He also says, writers carve language like a sculptor carves stone. They shape words into realities that compel belief and action. They listen not only to the rhymes of words, but also to the silences between words. They understand that words do far more harm in the world than bombs and bullets, and more good than all the charities and humanitarian schemes put together. And then one other quote that he has is, one of the experiences that can motivate our actions is experience with the stories from literature. This seems far-fetched to some, especially those who make a dubious distinction between literature and the supposedly real world. Are we genuinely prepared to say that working in an office building or shopping in a mall is real, while reading Tolstoy is not? Which engages us most fully as thinking, feeling, believing, questioning creatures? Which best draws out our humanity? Which is most likely to change it? Us. Which then is more real? A story is something that happens to you as much as a car wreck or job promotion or falling in love. We are all, in fact, the products of our stories, including the stories from literature. And to piggyback on that, there was a quote, can't remember who initially said it, but he said, you know, where you'll be at in 5 years is determined by two things, the people you're with and the books you read. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, is that the stories and the things that we read and engage with is going to shape and form us in some way, shape, or form, and as well as the people that are around us. You know, we kind of become the sum total of, you know, the people we hang out and are with. And so that combined with books is going to change us and morph us into the type of person that is the sum of what we're kind of absorbing. And so it just kind of goes to show the importance of what we actually fill our minds with and what we read, and also the people that we're with. And they will definitely have an effect on us. And so Daniel Taylor, one last quote from him, he talks about story. He says, story is a vessel for carrying meaning. And so I think the more stories that we engage with, the more meaning we can see and realize in the world. And I definitely think that's going to enrich life. And so here's a quote from G.K. Chesterton. He says, people wonder why the novel is the most popular form of literature. People wonder why it is read more than books of science or books of metaphysics. The reason is very simple. It is merely that the novel is more true than they are. Life may sometimes legitimately appear as a book of science. Life may sometimes appear, and with a much greater legitimacy, as a book of metaphysics. But life is always a novel. Our existence may cease to be a song. It may cease even to be a beautiful lament. Our existence may not be an intelligible justice or even a recognizable wrong. But our existence is still a story. In the fiery alphabet of every sense, it is written to be continued in our next. To go on to, these are some of my favorite writers, and so I just think this is they have such good things to say. Andy Wilson, in his book Death by Living, he says, I am often asked why I write fiction for children, because those whom I am called to feed are still children, because I am still a child, because the world is big and the world is wonderful, but it is also terrifying. It is an ocean full of paper boats, and for many children, the only nobility, the only joy, the only strength and sacrifice that they see firsthand, that they see in flesh, comes in fiction. Imagined friends and heroes can shape loves and loyalties and choices as much or more as real ones. Even when children have plenty of joy in their lives, good stories reinforce it. I have been more influenced as a person by my childhood readings of Tolkien and Lewis than by any idea books that I read in college and grad school. The events and characters in Narnia and Middle Earth shaped my ideals, my dreams, my loyalties, and my goals. Stories are the closest our own words can ever come to being made flesh, gifts unwrapped in the imagination. His dad, Douglas Wilson, In his book Wordsmith, he says, "Read like someone who can afford to forget most of what you read. It does not matter because you are still going to be shaped by it." You get into Tolkien. I mean, his whole life basically coming up with a language that didn't exist, and then a whole world, Middle Earth, and creating different ages and hundreds of characters and genealogies, and a lot of people think, well, man, why would a guy spend most of his life creating something that's not real, creating something that's fiction and fantasy? And John Bloom actually has a really good article, if you want to go to Desiring God, where he actually talks about that. And I won't give it all away, but I'll quote him in saying, you know, "No fairy story or myth or man-made religion in all of recorded history compares with the great story of Christianity. But we need all the help we can get to turn our eyes away from our confined corner of reality and see the story with fresh eyes." And he says, "For many, looking through the fairy lenses of Middle Earth has helped them see again the real epic we each are a small part of. They have been helped to see the gleam of the true Evangelium and press on in the journeys to which they have been appointed with renewed hope and courage, knowing that at the end of the road is home." And so he talks about how, he says, "Investing life in created fantasy that results in pointing real people in the real world to true hope and the true Evangelium is not a waste, but well done." And so, go ahead and read his article, and you can probably get a hint of his conclusion of, did Tolkien waste his life or not? And sorry for my sniffles, I'm just getting over a cold here, so. And then let's go to I'm gonna go to John Piper. So this is a quote from him talking about the imagination. And he says, "The other reason I say that imagination is a Christian duty is that when a person speaks or writes or sings or paints about breathtaking truth in a boring way, it is probably a sin. Imagination is the faculty of the mind that God has given us to make the communication of his beauty beautiful. Imagination may be like the hardest work of the human mind and perhaps the most godlike. It is the closest we get to creation out of nothing. Imagination is like a muscle. It grows stronger when you flex it. And when you must flex it, it does not usually put itself into action. And you must flex it. It does not usually put itself into action. It awaits the will. Imagination is also contagious. When you're around someone alive or dead who uses it a lot, you tend to catch it. So I suggest that you hang out with some people, mainly dead poets, who are full of imagination, and that you exert yourself to think up a new way to say an old truth. God is worthy. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song, or picture, or poem, or figure of speech." End quote. Lewis talks about, in order for the world to be saved, it needs to be re-mythologized. And I think what he's getting at is that a lot of times, I think, within the church and within Christianity is we've, and I know, I think a lot of people have kind of grown up with this very sterile form of what we think Christianity is like, or it's just right and wrong. It's just doing all the right things and avoiding all the bad things and trying to be a good person, even though that's not what it's about. But you know, we also then kind of paint these pictures of heaven, like, you know, it's just a bunch of white angels with wings and playing harps in the clouds, and you know, just a messed up view of heaven. But also I think that's just kind of creeped into the church of what we just have a very, you know, even just looking at modern day things, we just have a very, what's the word? modern way of viewing things. We view things as almost, we view the world almost as a machine. We view things as I don't know, just very mechanical. And so I think what Lewis is getting at is we've kind of lost the wonder, the fantasy of this world, and we've we need to recapture that. And so Christianity just isn't a bunch of facts that we just need to learn, or a bunch of truths that we need to know about. It's not just an equation, or seven great steps to your best life now or anything like that. So it's the true myth. It's myth that actually happened in history. It's an epic. It's a story that God wrote and is writing and continues to write. And so, and that this is all pointing to Jesus, who is God made flesh, and the way that, you know, just reading the Bible, I mean, the amount of wonders and miracles and just the crazy amount of things that happen in there. I mean, this is a mind-blowing fantasy world that we all live in, and we get to be a part of it. And you know, scriptures talk about the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky proclaims his excellencies, and how the whole earth is full of God's glory. And so the question is do we have eyes to see that? Do we see it? And so Lewis also says, quote, "Why read fairy tales? As Aslan says to Lucy on one occasion, sorry, quote, this was the very reason you were brought into Narnia, that by knowing me here for a little, you might know me better there," end quote. And George MacDonald on Lilith, he says, "If you understand any world besides your own, you'd understand your own much better." And then I'll just end it with this. This is from Professor Luis Marcos. He writes, quote, "We are in many ways a civilization adrift on the stormy seas of relativism and existentialism. The first ism has robbed us of any transcendent standard against which we can measure our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. The second has emptied our lives of any higher meaning, purpose, or direction. Our compass is broken and the stars obliterated, and we are left with nothing to navigate but a vague faith in the modern triad of progress, consumerism and egalitarianism. They are not enough. What we need, in short, are stories." And he says the stories we need are precisely those that will beckon us to follow their heroes along the road, that will embody for us the true nature of good and evil, virtue and vice, and then challenge us to engage in the struggle between the two, that will open our eyes and ears to that sacramental fairy magic that we so often miss. So I'll leave it there. Just a lot of gems that I've found along my reading these last handful of years. And hopefully that'll kind of convince you or help you see why we should read fiction and literature, and not just fiction, but I think look out for really good fiction, really good writers that convey the truth. And that's not just fiction isn't just meant to be just for fun. Reading a book is meant to teach and to delight, and I think when a book can do both of those, I think that's really great. And so even in fiction stories, there's a message. It's teaching you something. And so encourage you to figure out, you know, ask those questions of what is the message, and what is this trying to say to me? Engage with it, and join in the dialogue and the conversations with the author whether they're dead or alive, and see what kind of see what they're trying to say to you. So I'll leave you there. So hopefully to help you just kind of see just the wonder of good fiction stories and why we need them. And talk to you guys later.